reading it got me wondering if sarcasm is inherently queer. In this collection, sarcasm is elevated to art.
Quarantine has been hard for all of us. Yet a silver lining in quarantine for me has been the opportunity to do some self-exploration.
In 1965, I was coming out more, and I was still wearing makeup, but I was still going to jail just for wearing makeup.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Poland's homophobic high tide is met with Krakow's Equality March, gay youth finds identity time in quarantine, and sarcasm shines in queer future short stories. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Brian DeShazer.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending September 5th, 2020. Religious tensions, government aggression, and queer activist defiance marked the escalating struggle in Poland this week. Roman Catholic Church leaders intensified their anti-queer rhetoric after a three-day bishops' conference. A 27-page report detailing their positions on LGBTQ issues included the creation of what it called conversion therapy clinics to help people regain their sexual health and natural sexual orientation. However, Auxiliary Bishop of the Archdiocese of Lublin, Josef Reubel, issued a statement a few days later saying that the idea of bishops forcing the medically discredited therapy on anyone was a misconception. He told the Catholic Herald that the clinics would only be for those who seek such help because they experience suffering because of their inclinations. Reubel apparently fails to see any irony in the Church's role in creating that suffering.
Poland's Justice Minister Zbigniew Ziobro has announced that the federal government will replace European Union funding that's been pulled from an LGBT-free zone town. Tuchów was one of six Polish municipalities with such an anti-queer declaration to be rejected from participating in the EU's town twinning program. Tuchów had been paired with Saint-Jean-de-Bray, but authorities in the French city ended the relationship because it is now tainted. Ziobro said Tuchów would be bailed out by the ministry's justice fund. He promised to reach out to any other municipalities that have also lost EU funding. Meanwhile, the government has announced Zbigniew Rachu as its new foreign minister. Described as a Roman Catholic fundamentalist, the former provincial governor and law professor has equated LGBT ideology with pedophilia, euthanasia, and cannibalism. Railing against LGBT ideology helped Polish President Andrzej Duda win narrow re-election recently. He promised to block any efforts to legally recognize same-gender couples or to allow LGBT people to adopt and to ban any LGBTQ-supportive education in schools.
Still, the 16th annual Equality March was peacefully celebrated in Krakow on August 29th, according to the Krakow Post. It's usually held in May, but the COVID-19 pandemic forced its postponement. Even now, the march through the streets of the city was replaced by a gathering in the main square, social distancing and face masks being the order of the day. Thousands of LGBTQ people and their allies waved rainbow flags, banged drums, danced to music from a sound truck, and heard speeches by organizers and dignitaries. Banners and chants proclaimed, "Love everyone without exception," "Rainbow sheep of the family," and "I am a human being." Participants and speakers also expressed support for the people of Belarus, who are currently trying to break free from the despotic President Alexander Lukashenko. Police cordoned off what the Post described as a small group of fascists who were protesting the equality event. An unidentified rally speaker addressed the protesters directly. "The more you hate us, the sooner we will win, because love will always win over hate."
Dozens of people were detained by Jakarta police at what was identified as a gay party in the Indonesian capital city. 9 remain jailed for organizing the party. 47 other detainees were released. The August 29th event had been promoted on social media as a gathering of men to promote independence, according to the online news outlet Coconuts Jakarta. Invitations specified a registration fee, dress code, and prohibited attendees from bringing weapons or using drugs. Same-gender sex is not illegal in Indonesia on paper, except in Aceh. That Islamic-governed province enforces severe penalties for being caught having queer sex. The party organizers in Jakarta are being charged with facilitating an immoral activity under the country's vague anti-pornography laws. They could be fined and imprisoned for up to 15 years. The raid is part of a continuing pattern of abusive treatment of LGBTQ people in Indonesia. It's a technically secular Muslim-majority nation, but the repression often comes at the behest of religious authorities. Amnesty International has joined other global human rights groups in criticizing previous raids as violations of the human right to privacy, freedom of expression, and freedom of assembly and association. Amnesty spokesperson Usman Hamid says the latest raid has no legal justification. He argued, such a gathering would pose no threat to anyone.
In the U.S., another federal court has rejected the Trump administration's effort to overturn healthcare anti-discrimination protections for LGBTQ people. U.S. District Court Judge James E. Bosberg in Washington, D.C., issued a preliminary injunction blocking new rules issued by the Health and Human Services Department from taking effect. Their reinterpretation of the Affordable Care Act narrows the definition of sex discrimination and allows healthcare providers and insurance companies to refuse service to LGBTQ people based on religious belief. Bosberg issued the injunction on September 2nd. It's similar to a late August injunction from the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of New York in a lawsuit brought by two transgender women. Both injunctions reference the Supreme Court's right to work ruling. The one that declared bias based on sex includes sexual orientation and gender identity. Most observers expect the Trump administration to appeal.
Trump's State Department Undersecretary Mike Pompeo has something else that's likely to appeal. A second federal court has declared that a baby born via surrogate overseas to a married U.S. gay couple is a citizen. Simone Mize Gregg was born in England last year via surrogacy to married Atlanta dads Derek Mize and Jonathan Gregg. U.S. District Judge Michael L. Brown ruled for the Northern District of Georgia on August 27th that under immigration and naturalization laws, Simone is a U.S. citizen by birth. Judge Brown was appointed to his current post by Donald Trump. The decision echoes the August ruling of a federal judge in Maryland that the daughter of a gay couple born via surrogate in Canada is also a U.S. citizen. Even though the legally married gay couples in both the English and Canadian surrogacy cases are listed by those countries as the parents of their respective daughters, the U.S. State Department has argued that both babies were born out of wedlock. The department is already appealing the Canadian case ruling.
A number of LGBTQ, foster care, and Native American groups have joined forces in another kind of lawsuit against the Trump administration. They're challenging the removal of Health and Human Services Department directives to keep track of tribal and LGBTQ youth placed in foster care. During the Obama era, foster care workers were to ask about the sexual orientation and tribal identity of children in the system. The rules were intended, in part, to facilitate U.S. law requiring Native American youth to be placed with relatives or fellow tribal members whenever possible. Specifically tracking the placement of queer youth helps the department monitor the outcomes of LGBTQ children in foster care, as well as children placed with rainbow families. The complaint against the effort to trump those rules was filed in San Francisco at the U.S. District Court of the Northern District of California on August 27th. Angel Gonzalez is the leader of Facing Foster Care in Alaska and is one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit. She noted that Alaska Native, American Indian, and LGBTQ plus youth are overrepresented in child welfare systems across the country. Our brothers and sisters of foster care deserve to be counted so that the data can drive solutions and end the pipeline to homelessness, incarceration, and intergenerational trauma.
Finally, Jacob Blake's trans cousin has stepped up into the Black Lives Matter movement and will not be deterred. Blake remains paralyzed from the waist down in a hospital after being shot in the back 7 times at close range by a Kenosha, Wisconsin police officer. It was one of the most recent high-profile cases of police violence against black men. Elliot Chavez spoke at a rally outside Seattle, Washington City Hall this week to condemn the unnecessary attack on his unarmed cousin, whom he has never met in person. Chavez introduced himself at the rally as a trans male living in the world today and talked about his reluctance to go public. He said, "Fear causes us to do scary things. Fear makes us throw bricks, hurt people, but that is not the answer. If you are scared, know that courage is the reason you will persist." Praise for Chavez dominated social media, but bigots also chimed in with transphobic, homophobic, and racist remarks, including death threats. Chavez responded that, "We have a message that we're going to spread regardless of the hate that we're going to get." He urged other LGBTQ people who fear attending protests in person to use social media. Chavez declared, "Spread the message that black lives do matter, that Jacob Blake was shot 7 times in the back, and he deserves a voice."
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending September 5th, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is recording remotely during the COVID-19 emergency. It's written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to NewsWrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out Radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer. Stay healthy.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay safe.
The experience has been somewhat of a constant throughout my teenage years. Every time I try out a new style or wear a unique piece of clothing, I expect to be made fun of or be called a slur.
There is something to be gained from social distancing. Find yourself in isolation later in the program. Considering the stormy present, a future of queer sarcasm might sound pretty good right now. That's a world created by short story author Julian Jarboe. This Way Out's Queer Life and Lit commentator Janet Mason paid a timely visit.
The title, Everyone on the Moon, is a central personnel of this collection of short stories by Julian K. Jarboe, Leith Press 2020, is prophetic for the times we're in. In this collection, the future is now, gender is fluid, and climate catastrophe and spirituality collide. This well-written, slim collection is Jarboe's first book, and it proves that there are some new frontiers. Reading it got me wondering if sarcasm is inherently queer. Sarcasm has been used by queers, certainly. It does protect us and point out the truth. And perhaps the most importantly, sarcasm can be bitingly humorous. But in this collection, sarcasm is elevated to art. In a story called Self-Care, which is set in the future, the narrator ends up living in a church, which mandates that all residents attend a therapy group, of which Jarboe writes, "Everyone talked like they'd invented feelings. This one person was so hung up on not suffering enough to feel like they could really call themselves marginalized." In this same story, the narrator befriends another transgender person living at the same shelter who was described as a tall, beautiful butch with stone gray eyes named Bert, short for Roberta. Bert is a former truck driver, an occupation she strongly identifies with, but at the same time, she defends the robots who took her place. Bert keeps mentioning that she is a truck driver. The narrator, A self-described gay transsexual witch responds by saying, "Well, you'd still be driving a truck if you had been replaced with a machine. I worked 16-hour days every day, and robots can do 24 straight. Nothing wrong with that. No self-driving semi ever called me a he-she or pulled a knife out to show me at a rest stop." When I finished reading Everyone on the Moon is Essential Personnel stories, Julia K. Jarbo from Leith Press, I was left with more questions than answers. It is a volume of stories that made me think. There is no denying that it was written for our time. The future is here, and gender is fluid. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin, author of Tales of the City, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio news magazine produced by, about, and for our sexually diverse communities and those who love them.
If I were to wear a lot of makeup in the daytime, they might think that I was a male. But if I wear little makeup, they think I'm a female and they just let me ride on by.
Try to ride on by this trailblazing trans activist at your peril later in the program.
Everyone thinks that I'm a freak, the way I dress, the way I speak. I'm too thin, I hate my voice. I'd switch lives if I had the choice. I'll be tall and rich someday. Everything will go my way. Someday, someday.
If you think you're going crazy in the COVID cloister, take a tip from a queer teen who's using the time in quarantine to go sane.
This is Outcasting Overtime from Media for the Public Good, producer of Public Radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Hi, I'm Lucas, an Outcasting youth participant. Self-exploration and expression are hard for everyone. Within high school environments, it can be very hard for all teenagers to express themselves, but it can be even harder for queer people. The constant feeling of being judged can slowly whittle away at one's individuality, especially for queer people. For me personally, the gay slurs I heard as a kid forced me to suppress the sides of myself that are more stereotypically associated with gay men and less associated with abstract ideals of masculinity. I remember how nervous I was in middle school when I wore skinny jeans for the first time. I was scared that everyone was staring at my legs or calling me names behind my back. This fear came back again in freshman year when I put on a simple old necklace that my grandmother had owned. Even though the necklace made me feel happy and confident in front of a mirror, that confidence slowly melted away as soon as I stepped outside. Every so often, my eyes would flash around the classroom, waiting to meet stares and whispers. Halfway through the day, I tucked the necklace under my shirt, unable to handle my own fears. The experience has been somewhat of a constant throughout my teenage years. Every time I try out a new style or wear a unique piece of clothing, I expect to be made fun of or be called a slur. Sometimes, after getting ready to leave home for the day, I glance in the mirror one last time and then inch back to my room to throw on a sweatshirt, concealing the outfit I had just pieced together. I've struggled to tackle the hate I felt for the effeminate aspects of myself. Quarantine has been hard for all of us, especially those who have lost family members or are still risking their lives in essential positions. Yet a silver lining in quarantine for me has been the opportunity to do some self-exploration. I'm sure all teenagers can agree that the stresses of high school, homework, sports, or just interacting with other teens can get in the way of us finding out who we are and how we want to present ourselves to the world. Amid the flurry of tests, papers, and college applications, I feel as though I've lacked the time to really sit down and reflect on my insecurities, and specifically, to reflect on why I cared so much about being labeled gay by strangers. With the onset of quarantine, I have had the opportunity to explore who I am and become more comfortable with the feminine aspects of my personality. Seeing queer people express themselves through their social media platforms has inspired me to confront the parts of myself I've suppressed for years. I've always wanted to wear a long, flowing skirt, but as a man, I feel insecure about how people would respond. Now that I'm not leaving my house except for short trips to the grocery store, I have no reason to feel ashamed or feel as though I'm being judged. On top of that, I have nothing else to do but think and do homework, and work on outcasting, of course. And that has allowed me to overcome what I had always feared. So after a month in quarantine, I went to work. I had bought fabric from a local Goodwill store a few months before, but I'd never had the confidence to actually use it. I decided to create a video of the skirt's construction. It took me 7 hours to draft, pin, and sew the skirt, but after almost a full day of work, I had a finished garment. Looking in the mirror for the first time after I put it on, I felt self-assured and confident. I felt as though I had just woken up from a long nap or eaten a great meal. I was happy and proud of what I had made, so I posted it on the internet under the tag LGBT. That night, and over the next few days, the video received almost 80,000 views and hundreds of comments. Many of them were from young queer people going through the same periods of questioning that I was, looking for an outlet online. There seems to be an increasing movement, primarily online, in which people are breaking the mold of what is considered normal. But our society has pretty rigid expectations about what's considered gender appropriate for men and women. Constant social contact continues to reinforce definitions of masculinity and femininity as we continue to compare ourselves to others. This is especially suffocating to LGBTQ youth, who can feel suppressed by these expectations. So for many of us, quarantine, or the ending of constant social interaction, has allowed us to escape gendered and heteronormative obligations, heteronormative being the assumption that everyone is straight and cisgender. So as we're shuttered up inside our homes, a lot of us, especially LGBTQ youth, have had a lot of time to reflect on ourselves and how we interact with our straight peers. As a result of this time I've spent trying to understand myself better, I'll be more equipped to return to daily life, confident in expressing my true self. So while quarantine has been taxing in countless ways, this redeeming aspect gives me hope that the future will be better. Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime from Media for the Public Good, producer of Public Radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to all Outcasting content. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
Take a walk, sun is warm. Feel yourself transform. Summer's coming, a gorgeous day. We're all beautiful from 6 feet away. Two meters away.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis, and you're listening to This Way Out.
From the minute the first brick was thrown at the Stonewall Inn to her mysterious death in 1992, Marsha P. Johnson was a driving force in the movement for equality. Now, both the state she had to flee and the state where she learned to fight are building monuments to her. Johnson was already a presence in New York's drag community and a champion against police violence when the June 1969 uprising turned her into an organizer. Along with Sylvia Rivera, Johnson founded STAR, Street Transvestite Action Revolutionaries. STAR was the only marking on a tape of a 1970 interview from WBAI New York. Researcher Ryan Ferry discovered that that tape was the earliest known recording of the now iconic Johnson and Rivera. Here's some of what young Marsha P. Johnson had to say.
As I was growing up, I met a lot of men, but they never appealed to me you know, too much sexually. I used to try and keep away from him because of my hometown. If you were homosexual, you were out of it. And they would call you all kinds of names. And then when I first came to New York, I was 17 years old. That's when I started getting kind of more like a transvestite. I started out with makeup in 1963, 1964, and in 1965 I was coming out more, and I was still wearing makeup, but I was still going to jail just for wearing makeup. In 1969 I started wearing female attire full time. Usually I wear a short dress every day of the week. I just don't put on much makeup, anything, until after dark, because it draws too much attention. If I were to wear a lot of makeup in the daytime, they might think that I was a male. But if I wear little makeup, they think I'm a female and they just let me ride on by. And if I wear a lot of makeup at night, they automatically know I'm female. They really can't tell the difference about me because I'm on my way to be a sex change. I have hormone treatments and my bust is it's a small bust, but it's a nice handful. And they feel that nice handful and they automatically go under the illusion that I might be real. From going into hormones, I've gotten so that I kind of dislike heterosexual men. And if I was to marry a male, it would strictly be a gay male. Because I don't care if a heterosexual man is a husband.
That excerpt from the Marsha P. Johnson interview comes to us courtesy of the Making Gay History podcast. The hometown Johnson referred to is Elizabeth, New Jersey, where plans were announced on August 27th to erect a monument in her honor. Also in late August, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo announced the dedication of Marsha P. Johnson State Park in Brooklyn. For more of Johnson's words from the archives, you can find Making Gay History on all major podcast platforms and at www.makinggayhistory.com. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Tanya Kane Perry and Brian DeShazer, produced by Brian DeShazer, from Janet Mason, and from Outcaster Lucas, produced by Mark Sofas. Special thanks to the Making Gay History podcast, the Manhattan Transfer, David Brown, Jamie Anderson, and the Tom Robinson Band performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks to Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and donors Christopher Matthews and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078 USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KCMJ, Colorado Springs, Colorado, WPKN, Bridgeport, Connecticut, 8CCC, Alice Springs, Australia, Northern Territory, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay safe and stay tuned.